Good morning, Journey.
Good morning, Stan.
My name's Stan, if you don't know me. I'm the recovery director here at Journey, so sounds pretty important. So if you don't see me here, sometimes I'm out there directing. That's what I'm out there doing. It has to sound like I'm out there pointing and doing important things. I'm really excited about all the outreach that Journey's involved in and has been since we've been here. And I love the way Journey is fearless in going out in ministry. And so I wanted to bring this morning, take the opportunity to bring a counseling model, a lay counseling model here to share with you. I wanted to bring a powerful tool here this morning. And in your bulletin, you have this. It's called The Process. That's what we named it. And it comes with a lot of work. And comes out of what heavily influences is the Genesis process from Michael Dye. He's done an amazing work. And so I wanted to share that as a tool. I think this would fall under the category of discipleship. We call it recovery, but I think the church calls it discipleship. If someone comes to you and they have some sort of habit or struggle or addiction, some kind of life-controlling problem, do you know how to personally walk someone through, say, the 12-step process, right? Or do you have some kind of biblical process you know how to walk someone through? I mean, there's a lot of addictions going on out there, a lot of habits, a lot of people involved in self-harming behavior, and people in a lot of pain, and I'm sure there's a lot of that going on in here as well. I know for me, I've heard thousands of sermons, and you know, a lot of times when I was younger and through the years, what was going on up front and what was being presented up front, I felt like I was a million miles away from it. And I didn't know how those things could be possible. So we have this Get Real campaign we're on. So I really want to be able to share what would have really been helpful for me, too, through those years of addiction. As you guys know, most of you know my story. I grew up in a home of addiction, became a heavy, heavy drug user and an addict for almost my whole life. And so I was operating off of a map that wasn't accurate at all. So I developed tools from that map that couldn't possibly work. The results were terrible. The results were arrests and divorce and all these problems, addictions. And I know as believers, you know, every believer has within them, no matter how deep the problems, no matter how far down a road of darkness we could travel, how entrenched we get into things, every believer has within them a deep desire to live out the gospel, you know, to live out their new identity, what my wife was talking about, to live out of what God has provided for us, who he says we are. There's that new nature within us all that we want to live out. We want to throw off our sinful stuff and these habits and addictions that are real problems. So this session is not really very churchy, so to say, but I feel like it's a great opportunity to equip us with a little bit of a map or a little process here that we can use. And perhaps you'll hear something in here that will help, as we are very involved in helping people with real problems and addictions and habits and struggles. So I really want to take this chance to present that, and hopefully you'll feel more equipped. And I know a lot of you already are. So the process here begins with the problem. And again, it's in your bulletin. The problem. I know that sounds negative to start. When I was writing this, I was like, that sounds pretty negative, start with the problem. But in all honesty, most of the time in what we're involved in, people have a real encounter with God and they get really real with life and with God through some sort of personal crisis. You know, when you find yourself in the back seat of a cop car, when divorce papers come, when there's a super intense health crisis due to these problems or habits, usually this is a real turning point or an opportunity for God to make this entrance and for things to be revealed that we weren't open to seeing before. So it starts with a problem, but you know, I find that to be a marvelous way that God uses to introduce himself. You know, so you know, someone comes to you with something that's not working in their life, some habit, some struggle, and it can be something really big, can be something small. You know, we hear it all. Probably have something to do with either a chemical or substance, a relationship, anxiety, food, that's a big one, work problems, anger, sex, some sort of computer addiction. You know, there's all these things that someone could come to you with these problems. So we start with that. So next we have on the list here the effect. And this is a place where we lovingly begin to explore the effect that this is having on us or on the person. And if you do your job right here, really save yourself some time down the road when we're in the process, because we want to really open eyes to its true effect. I know for me, the problems I had, habits, addictions, where, you know, taking these pills or doing this little habit over here or having a temper, I thought it was just affecting this little slice of my life. And when I would do this work on it, discover, wow, this is really this is affecting everything, like everything. And so it really opens your eyes. You want to cover how it's affecting their lives physically, mentally, emotionally, relationally, finance, spiritually. You want to cover all these in detail, lovingly, right? Physically, you know, idea of that is that some 80% of people in hospitals or with ailments can be traced back to stress. And whether that's totally accurate or not, I'm not sure. I read it all the time. That's a real big number. You know, the way our habits and our lifestyles begin to affect us physically. And we want to explore that. Mentally, how is it affecting you mentally, this habit or this struggle? And we have to understand that if we're doing something that is harming ourselves, not good for us, and we know that, and we continue to do it anyway, there are mental processes going on, subconscious, conscious processes that enable us to lie to ourselves and to others, to rationalize, minimize, to sell it to ourselves in order to continue doing this. This is an important thing to look at mentally, what is going on here and its effect. Emotionally, man, we are emotional creatures, and our emotions are just very precious indicators, like dash lights, you know, on a super intense, maybe aircraft, you know, I don't want to say car, that's too, you know, only a couple of lights there, but I'm talking about a real intricate dashboard of lights. We want to pay attention to our emotions. We want to know what's going on there, read them. But if we stuff them, if we deny them, we just throw a blanket over it, I don't want to see, you know, remove the light bulbs, we're really going to experience some severe consequences of doing that. How it affects us relationally, most oftentimes addictions are replacing relationships, turning to a substance or a habit or some activity, the way I should turn to a relationship, the way I should be turning to God and being vulnerable, and this habit or problem or struggle, you know, keeps me to where I don't have to do that. I want to be vulnerable. Financially, there's always that aspect. A lot of times, you know, we see these celebrities and movie stars can have a lifetime of addiction And they don't really have to experience the big crash because they can just keep throwing money at it. And just throw enough money at it and the thing seems to go away. So they never really experience that time where it really hurts. And now I'm going to have to deal with this, you know. Spiritually, how it affects us spiritually. God speaks to us and he does speak to us through our circumstances. That's how I experience him a lot. Opens doors, closes doors, reveals circumstances to me. He speaks to us through that still, small voice, that real tender voice, consistently. And when I deny that, I quench that, I don't listen to that, you know, again, I'm going to experience some things out of that. So, again, we want to show the effect of this habit, this problem, that it's affecting every single area, right? So I had to come to terms with my addictions and problems. I've had so many of them, guys. I grew up with so many addictions. I was right out of the gate addicted to so many things. And so I've had so many dysfunctions to peel off and layer off. It could be really discouraging. So I find this tool and this little thing here very refreshing. It's really good work. It's worth doing. But I had to come to terms with that I had a problem that told me I don't have a problem. And so denial is self-lying, and I have to really work to bust through that and go, okay, I see it. Okay, next, so we looked at the problem, we looked at its effect lovingly, and now the bind. Boy, this is a big one. This is where we really get some work done, is all addictions, all habits, self-harming behaviors, things that aren't serving us anymore, relationships, whatever it is, I find myself in these all the time, and I'm dealing with some, you know, even now, like I'm really looking at this, where they present a double bind. And I don't know how many of you have struggled with addictions or habits or have really confront some internal things that were really big. I kind of described it as rolling a snowball as it gets bigger and bigger, you know, and then the ground starts to turn more and more vertical, and the snowball is getting bigger and bigger. Pretty soon, that thing's, I'm almost going straight up, and the thing's this giant-sized snowball, and I find myself in a bind where I can't possibly continue. You guys seeing this? This is my reenactment. I can't possibly continue because it's going to kill me. I'm exhausted, right? I can only think of me. It's all that my life is about. And all I want to do is feel better. All I want is relief. I lived that life. That has been my life. Who am I thinking about? Who am I consumed with? You know, what is my focus? And I can't continue on any longer. But if I quit, this thing's going to crush me. I'm crushed. Like I'm going to be just rolled over top of by this thing. In so many years, I didn't spend getting high. I was running from the withdrawals. I was running from the consequence of all those years of using. This is a double bind. And the double bind is what we call like a lose-lose scenario where our brain thinks, I can't win. I can't keep going. I can't quit. I'm in a bind. And so that really sends us into a panic when it comes to confronting problems. And this is a wonderful tool to use when discussing addictions and habits with people, is present the double bind. If I continue doing this, what's that going to result in? If I give up the behavior, what am I going to experience if I quit? That's the reveal we're really looking for, is if I give up my anger, if I don't blow up, what am I going to experience then in that moment? What am I going to feel there? What's coming to surface? A lot of people report, well, I would just be weak and powerless and unheard, you know, that kind of stuff. If I give up my food addiction, if I just quit overeating, what am I going to experience in here that I've been running from, that I really don't want to experience? If I give up my addiction to media, spending, all these things that we could list anything, but if I stop, there's that sense of slamming the brakes on a car where you just you know, everything comes forward. And it's like, what is that that's coming forward? That's really what we want to look at. All addicts believe at heart that something bad's going to happen to them if they give up whatever it is. And I'm not talking logic. Addiction's never an information deficit, hardly ever, you know. I remember people telling me, you know, don't you know that's bad for you? Oh, that changes everything. Oh, man. Let me come out of this dark alley and no more needles and heroin. I didn't know. That's incredible. Thank you. Thank you. It's bad for me. It's never an information deficit. All addictions do the same thing in that they push back unwanted thoughts, unwanted feelings. I don't want to feel that. I don't want to think about that. Unwanted memories. I don't want to remember. I don't want to deal with it. It pushes them back to the back of our brains and keeps them from being in our conscious mind. And so I don't have to deal with them. So it's a powerful distraction. It's a powerful numbing agent, whatever it is. And we have to understand that. And this double bind thing, this bind is a really good tool of really exploring that. That's why people that walk in sobriety when they first come sober, of whatever it is, can become very irritated. You know, there's that withdrawal, that experience of stuff coming forward. And the longer you walk out your addiction, there's a lot more that comes forward, believe me. That's why oftentimes when people get sober, you know, there's this time of really deep grieving because you realize what you've done. You realize who you've hurt. Oftentimes they immediately begin turning to their family going, guys, I'm so sorry, you know. And it's a tough time. So the double bind is, if I keep doing this, this is what I'm going to experience. If I quit, this is what I'm going to experience. What's the right thing to do here? The right thing is usually the hard thing, usually. You see Jesus and the cross. Case in point, all throughout Scripture, when people choose the hard thing, God blesses it. He's on them. He's with them. He's like, fear not. Let's do this, you know. God is into that. He's into that hard thing, not just the easy thing. It comes to mind that Jesus talked about, if your eye offends you, what? Pluck it out, hand, cut it off. And what's he talking about? He's talking about the self-induced pain that we have to experience to deal with our stuff. And I stand before you, you know, many times have pulled eyes out and cut my hands off, and it's just a very painful process. And I don't usually do that quietly, you know. You can ask my wife about it. I'm a big baby, you know. I cry about all of it and complain. It's very painful. And I think I expressed this here at Journey before about how, you know, I lived a life of addiction. You know, I was married and lived a double life, completely a double life. And my wife and family had no idea the depths of addiction I walked in every night, in the alleys, and the ways I risked my life and put everything on the line. So many times I had such high-risk behavior. And I remember finding my way at times when I would have really close calls and I would have, you know, seizure episodes, or I would just have some really close calls, and I knew, man, I've got to deal with this, you know. I would find my way in front of a professional or some kind of a recovery person that was an expert in the field, and I would make my way to them and sit in front of them. And I remember my attitude was like even impatient there in one meeting, you know, like a half an hour meeting. Like, I'm like, okay, I made myself. I thought recovery was, now I'm in, I've done it. I made it here. Now, come on, give me the goods. Come on, I'll have all day. Got places to go. Give me the deal. And I remember the guy looking at me. I remember this happened to me several times, where a guy looked at me and said, you know, the amount of stuff you're using, the amount of time you've been doing this, your upbringing, all these things that are coming. And he was like, you have any idea what you are dealing with here, Stan? You come in here with a silverback gorilla locked onto you. In fact, it's so locked onto you, it's part of you, can hardly see you in there. And you come in here like you're going to make a drug deal and recover. Like, you know, here's the money, here's the slip, now I'm recovered, yay. He's like, dude, you got a serious problem. And he told me right now, here's a phone. I'll make the call for you. Call your wife right now. Get her on the phone. I'll be right here with you. Quit your job. Immediately quit your job. Go into a 2-year program. I'll set it up right here from this moment. We'll walk in there right now, 2 years. And when you walk out of there, you will have a nice beginning to what we call recovery. Let's do it. And I remember just kind of reeling back like, dude, whoa, you know, like, whoa, hang that phone up. You know, I'm like, 2 years? I was like, there's no way I'll have 2 years. And you know what? If I would have listened to them, that would have saved me years and years. Guys, that would have saved me arrests. That would have saved me thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars divorce. That would have saved me so much time had I turned in and just done and embraced this stuff this guy really knew he was talking about. So we get to the double bind here. We're heading into some deep waters. If you continue doing this, what is that going to do? Is that, what are the results? Is that really going to serve you and your purpose and what you really want to do? You feel God has designed you to be. And if you give it up and you stop, whoa, what's going to happen there? What's coming up? That's a really important point. You got to do that really well. So then next, that leads us into, if we do that right, the next one called, it's name it. What's coming to surface? Let's call it. And that comes with sobriety. You know, a person that's just completely drunk off their feet isn't going to be able to tell you what's driving it. You know, they're not really going to be able to tell. We got to clear some stuff out of the way to begin reading what surfaces. I've had many people tell me it's like sitting in front of a swamp and you just sit still enough, long enough, that monster will emerge. And we're going to name it. What's its name? If I don't lose my temper, if I give up my temper, maybe it's I'm going to feel weak. I feel weak and inadequate. And we name it. Name it. If I don't eat, I feel a profound sense of loneliness deep in my soul. Loneliness. Some sort of being unloved. But whatever the name is, you see, it's very different than the problem that we began with. Very, very different. And it should be. We're getting down in now. If you guys do this work to this point and they name it, then good job. Congratulations. You guys have done a great job. Then you're all hired, right? You're all hired. Pick up your checks from Derek when he gets back. Naming it will reveal the need in that part of us that this thing is taking care of, that it's ministering to an area of our lives. And it is a need, a real need. We've seen some crazy, crazy stuff, bizarre addictions and things. Doesn't really matter. It's when you really get to the heart of it, it all makes sense. Just makes complete sense. It's a real need. A real need this thing's meeting. And they've discovered this thing and it does enough of it that it's working for them, but it's not working for them. But to them, they're really stuck. You know? And we have to have so much compassion on the addict. We have to have so much compassion on people trapped. You know, you would never walk up to a person that's drowning and gasping and panicking and grabbing anything around them and laugh at them or make fun of them or say, just get out of the water. You know, we would never do that because we understand need. And so a good question I like to ask about naming it, because this is a tough one sometimes for people, is I like to ask this question. My addiction or my reaction or my behavior is justified because I believe what? Have them make that statement. My temper and my blowing up is justified because I believe, and really let that sit. Let God deal with things. Let him bring things up. Let him stir hearts. God shows up in our counseling stuff so often. It's so powerful when it just pops up. Right? My overeating is justified because I believe what? There's beliefs surfacing. When someone pushes your button, something pushes your button, or someone, we all have these buttons that get pushed. It's usually never, never when someone pushes your button, they're not usually the ones that put it there. That's what I'm saying. And so we're trying to discover when that button was installed or what the name of that button is. It's a good start. Oftentimes these buttons are very old. They're antique buttons. Like they were installed so long ago. They're not under warranty. They haven't been under warranty for years and years, right? They don't even make those buttons anymore. Okay, so we went through the problem, the effect, thoroughly, the bind it presents, naming it, really naming it. What is it really? And then that leads us into the origin. Where is it coming from? And again, this sounds like a very simple step-by-step. I use this all the time. I use this on me and with other people, parts and pieces often. It's very effective. The origin of this issue, if you're acting like you're 8 years old when you're in the middle of it, probably a good cue of maybe where this thing began. Our emotions, again, are just powerful maps of our history, where we've been. Will emerge in oftentimes our feelings. We want to read those really well. We have a thing called projected lies, and we have a thing called survival lies. Projected lies are lies that have come to you from other people, things that were said to you, done to you, or not said, not done, that should have been, but they were projected onto us by other people, and we have believed them. And then there's the survival lie that will emerge. This projected lie comes to me, and then I have a survival lie that comes out. Because that's true, here's how I'm going to survive. And we want to pinpoint the projected lies and the survival lies and separate those out. Spend some time on that. I love doing this kind of work, seeing what comes from people and the knots that this stuff unties. You know, good questions I like to ask are, how did your family of origin resolve conflict? Right? How did that happen? How did they express hurt or fear? How did they respond to you when you expressed hurt or fear? You know, what did you get back? What did your family of origin turn to for comfort on a regular basis? You know, what was their feeding ground? You know, or how did they deal with anxiety? And we get a normal, oftentimes from our family of origin, where we come from. There's a normal and things that we get really, really used to. And oftentimes, I know for me, my normal was so not normal, but I didn't know it because to me, it was normal, right? My father had ran prostitutes and drugs and this giant, crazy 70s drug stuff going on and madness. But to us, it was normal. It's the way life worked. But normal, I've discovered when I became a Christian, my normal was not acceptable. And it needed some serious adjustments. Could you imagine if someone walked into your home while you're in your house and someone just walked in and a group of people came in and just took your kitchen over and now you're no longer allowed to use your kitchen? You know, oh, I'm going to get something to drink. Oh, I can't go in my kitchen. These people, you know. Oh, I'm going to go grab a dish for something or make some popcorn. No kitchen. You know, that'd be really weird, right? Can you imagine if you went over someone's house and this was going on and you're like, dude, what's up with your kitchen? And they're like, we've never had a kitchen. You know, my dad never had one. My grandfather never had one. You don't need a kitchen. We never had one. And you'd say to them, hey, let's go take your kitchen back. Right? You'd want to. You'd be like, let's go get it. You know, we can take them. And it'd be really awesome. And this is kind of what I'm talking about. Normal. When we talk to people and sit down and talk to people, in villages, in all other places, people that have walked and come out of families where mom's been in jail, now they're in jail, and their kids are seeing it, and all these things that are going on. There's a normal, and we begin to reveal what is this person's normal, and going, wow, we can do this. We can go in and take this kitchen back. And we love to put together these plans. So then we have number six on there is the truth. What's the truth? And again, this isn't some religious where you get up and you beat them with a Bible, you know. Truth, remember, we as Christians, and some people don't know what to do with this, but we house the very presence of God. We're like a temple. This is my body temple. And in this temple is the Holy of Holies, where the very presence of God resides. His voice, his ministry to me. And I can come in this temple and have face to face, and truth can be revealed to me. And this is something that we have to have confidence in, and we are relying on that when we are counseling, that God himself is stirring up truth and answering questions only God can answer. That's why I love doing this, is I don't have to have the answers. This is between them and God, and I'm facilitating a conversation there between them and God. What's the truth? So if you took that habit, that problem, that struggle, that addiction, and you set it aside, what's the truth? Can you emerge with God? Timidly, maybe afraid, maybe feeble-kneed. You took that addiction, you took that protective way, that thing that it's ministering to, that thing that's been up front for you all these years, and you set that thing aside, and you emerge with the Lord. Are you willing to do that? How do you see that? Isn't that exciting to be able to do that? Do you want to do that? I want to do that. I want to experience that. No one relates to that fake thing that's out there. No one. People related. I began relating to people in a clear way when I stepped out from behind all that and said, I'm scared. I'm really weak. I'm feeling this. You know, I don't know what to do. Then things got real for me. This is getting real here. We have made decisions about truth, about us, when we don't have the authority or the right information or the maturity to make those decisions. That's true. Example, if you walked up and you saw a parent just railing on their child, just chewing them out, would you walk by that situation and think, what a rotten kid. What a terrible child, right? That child's worthless. You would never do that because you're an adult and you know better. But we have done that as the child. We've concluded, they're talking to me this way. They're treating me this way. They're doing this. They're not doing this for me. So therefore, I'm worthless. I'm this. I'm without. I'm insecure. And out of that will come survival lies of, therefore, this is how I'm going to make it in the world. And it will be based on self-effort and a lie. It has to be confronted. We're reframing, in so many ways, we're reframing the past. We're reframing conclusions we've come to because we weren't able to make those conclusions in a truthful way, in a mature way, when we're that young. And we're coming to these conclusions. It's very, very important. Last year, I had a run-in. It was so painful with someone that I thought I was really close to and walked with. And it was so painful, this eruption that happened. And I was so hurt by it. Like, it really, really bothered me. And I do things with that where I go days and days grinding on it, taking them to court, going over and over it in my mind. It's a very painful place to be. To do that to situations. And I remember walking out there, church property, I was walking out there, and I'm walking with God because I'm very spiritual. Just kidding. I was out there, and the thought came to me, you know, Stan, what is it that if this person said to you, like if they walked right up and said this to you, that would make it all better? That all of a sudden you'd be okay? And I thought about it. I thought, well, they told me, you know, I really love you. I'm so glad you came into my life. I'm so glad you're here. You're very effective. You do the best you can. Man, I know you got problems, but man, I love you tons, just tons. Do you know how much I love you? And I'm here. I'm never going to leave you. Your position is secure with me. And I thought, if they said that to me, no more problem, right? No more grinding, no more going to court. And then the thought came to me, what am I waiting for? I can hear it right now. I can hear it right now in the very presence of God. See, I love you. I'm so glad you're here. I'm never going to leave you. You're doing a great job. You work really hard at what you do. You're really good at it. You're getting better. You got problems, but I'm right here with you, Stan. Let me minister to you. And I encourage myself in the Lord. And so, can you turn to someone that's right here with you? Can you turn to this, any of these people where you have all this with and say to them in an honest way, you're not responsible for my happiness and my contentment and my joy, my peace, so you're off the hook. That was a very freeing moment for me. To know that I can walk with God and have peace, contentment, and joy with him, and then that gives me the ability to look at things, and it's not about me. I can love people. I can actually love people because I'm spending that time with God, right? You imagine, I ask people this all the time, if you were healed and whole of this problem, this epidemic, completely free of it, walking in power, walking in presence, confident, what is it that you would have had to gone through? What is it in you that was healed that made this possible? What is it that you understand now that you didn't before? And asking these questions, these are great questions. And see, the thing is, my wife talks about identity in Christ and the way she runs to the bathroom. I love that story. Now I know why I can't ever get in the bathroom. Just kidding. But I love that. Getting our identity in Christ is so important, and we talk about it, and it's very hard to do. We talk about it all the time. We all get it, but we don't get it. See, the thing is, if I get my identity from you guys, then that means you can take it from me. If I get my identity from my job, then that means my job can take my identity. Man, you know? If I get my identity from anything in this world, man, I'm in trouble. And so getting my identity, you know, taking the umbilical off, things of this world, that was sound effects. It's like that. And attaching it to God is a process. It's difficult. It's worth the work. It's worth doing it. And then I'm not running around being threatened all the time. Right? Okay, so we went from the problem, the effect, the bind, naming it, the origin, the truth, and now support. The Genesis process, I know at the rescue mission, when you enter that program and they do this whole process like 2 years or something, you have to have a spiritual advisor, you have to have a sponsor, you have to have a small group you're in, and you have to have a church body. All verifiable, in place, all the time. I had a guy, I was telling him, you need to find 5 people to tell about our session every time we meet. And he said, if I had 5 people I could tell, I wouldn't have this problem. You know, I'm like, exactly, right? They understand the support. They understand the importance of wrapping ourselves around people that are going to challenge us, call us on stuff. I've been called on the carpet in groups by people, and it's painful. You know, JD runs an incredible group Sunday night, 4:30. I'm going to say it's probably the realest group I've ever been a part of. I mean, it's just raw. We just say it, and JD's amazing. He's an amazing person, and I love the way it's run. Support. We're no longer in isolation. We're not orphans anymore. Isn't that not the gospel message? Is we're not an orphan anymore. And part of being an orphan means we take care of ourselves. Right? And addiction is self-gratification. I'm taking care of me. And we have to bust that open and get support in there, lay things out on the table. Sometimes we call this taking massive action. You know, encourage that in a real healthy way. Massive action. We're just going for it. We're just launching into this. And so I want to say that if you do this right, do this process right, there will be a profound sense of gratitude, humility because you're not walking in fake chemical. You're not walking in with all these crutches and armor that's fake. You're out vulnerable, and it's you and God, right? Humility, a full dependence on God for everything you're doing, a peace, an acceptance of what is real, what your limitations are, what you can and can't do. And I just want to say this, guys, that I present myself and I carry myself today and now as a person that is so much weaker than I ever have before. Like, I'm pathetic. Like, I really, really, and I mean that in a good way, if you look back pictures of me 10 years ago, the way I carried myself, the way I walked around was trying to be intimidating, trying to have this toughness. I just had this thing. And I want you to know I walk as very weak and vulnerable more than I ever have in my life, but I want you to know this is the honest truth. I am stronger than I've ever been in my life. I walk in more power than I've ever experienced. And the reason is, it's not my strength, and it's not my power at all. It's that I am walking with a king. I am walking with a presence that has no end. When you step out from behind addictions and these protective things and these fake things, these survival lies, all this stuff, and we set it aside and we emerge with God only. I'm going to rely on him today. I want you to know now you're walking in God country. And I want you to know in God country, now you're walking in the realm of anything's possible. Anything's possible now, because it's not about me and my strength and my resources and how I can control everything. I'm relying on God. And then we show up together. And when I get to show up with him, crazy things happen. Wonderful things happen. It's an amazing life. I hope you find this process helpful. And if you have any questions or comments, you know, feel free to come talk to me. I just think it's a very useful tool. And the underground, it's not like a small group underground, like an NA or AA meeting. It's a church service with a recovery slant to it. And so we're a pretty cool group over there. We're having a lot of fun. And so I want to invite you out there. But I really appreciate Journey and the concern Journey has for the community here. And I hope this is helpful. Let me pray. Father, thank you for the work you're doing in Journey and through Journey. May we be positioned to help people in a way that people aren't doing out there, other churches aren't doing. We're not just playing church here. We want to get real and down into people's lives. We want to believe the gospel in our deepest heart so that we are free to love other people and minister to them real recovery with the answers that you have provided. Thank you for freedom. Thank you for my sobriety today. Just thank you so much, God, for what you've done. You've done an amazing thing. You're just an amazing God. And you're just awesome. And you bring life when we invite you into all these things. We praise you and thank you in Jesus' name. Amen.